In today's episode, we're going to talk about our reflections on the YouTube Health 23 event that was held in London in January 2023. So let's go. So, Gandhi, welcome. Yeah, we had a great time last week going down on the train to London and enjoying what was, I thought, quite an interesting and an enjoyable conference. So, yeah, I mean, how did you find things?
Yeah, it was a great opportunity to experience, I guess, a different type of world that we've not really been involved in, really, is it? Although we create lots of content for YouTube and various other platforms and stuff, we actually got the opportunity to see Google and YouTube and other YouTubers in the health space as well, which is a really interesting thing, actually, because, you know, you only see these people on screen, and getting to meet them in person was, definitely impactful.
Yeah, it was an interesting mix, wasn't it? So there were people from YouTube executives there. There were people from other parts of the NHS, so NHS England, NHS Digital. It was really nice to chat to them, you know, about the app and about all of the things that we see them doing and that we talk about on the channel. Yeah. There were hospital trusts that have been using video. There were sort of videographers or people that are producing content for them. There were independent creators, both professionals like ourselves and patient creators. It was a really good mix, and having a really just big open conversation about how to use the power of YouTube to improve health and access to health information. So it's really good. And I guess the tagline for the conference was, information is determinant of health, which I think is really quite pertinent. So I mean, how did you, first of all, I mean, how did you find going to the Google offices in London, Gandhi?
Yeah, they were pretty impressive, weren't they, Andy? I mean, you and I were sitting in the atrium of the entranceway, just marveling at, you know, just the size and the kind of the grandeur and stuff. And then we got taken up to a fairly secure room. You know, you couldn't really go anywhere within the building without an access card and that kind of stuff, which you would kind of expect. But a really nicely well laid out room, which I'm assuming is what they use for a lot of their conference stuff. So they've got their own kind of space to facilitate, you know, a stage. I know that there's, you know, photos that we put out on the day that shows, you know, what it looks like and stuff. People could definitely check out that. Or as well as actually, you know, I know you've done a really good blog, a written article on it from your Substack and stuff, which people should definitely join.
We'll link to that somewhere, but yeah, I'm playing with Substack now. I'm moving away from the blog, and I think Substack's where people are at, but that's a story for another day perhaps, but do check that out.
But yeah, it was an interesting space to have an event, and they actually hybrid produced that event as well, so it was obviously for those in the room as well as online. So I definitely took some tips of that for our potential conferences moving forward. But I guess the content was the key thing, and obviously seeing YouTube's focus on how they want to support the benefits of health and do health as best as they can, because they do feel an element of responsibility. But also, obviously, for YouTube's goals, it is to have people on platform. So providing the right information that keeps people on the platform to find the right information, to use that information appropriately and stuff, definitely something they're keen on looking at. And the whole day was around this whole concept of how they can support creators to do just that and stuff. So it was really interesting, and seeing some of the, you know, the content and the analytical stuff and things, and how, you know, what goes viral, what doesn't, the different perspectives and impact and stuff. It was just fascinating, to be honest.
Yeah, I felt they were trying to achieve a number of things, weren't they? They were trying to kind of support creators, get them talking to each other, give them some tips about how to be more effective. And then they also wanted to inform us about what they're doing to be responsible with the power they have, as being effectively the front door for many people, many countries' health services. So I guess it might be helpful to sort of break it down by stakeholders. That's how I did it in the article. So the people from Google were there, and they were making a few points, really. I mean, the first interesting point was that during the pandemic, they became the front door for many people for the health system. People had symptoms often, as was probably the case before, people will go to Google and type in their symptoms and, you know, try and get some information. They'll often be presented with a YouTube video. Sometimes they'll go straight to YouTube for YouTube videos. That was probably the case a bit before, became more the case in the pandemic, and I think forever more that will be the case. So that's a big responsibility for them. And for me, they also seemed to be saying how they were taking that responsibility seriously. But also, it appeared like they do acknowledge it's an opportunity for Alphabet, you know, as a business, to use its business assets to support people. And they talked about this path from discovery with Google search and DeepMind insights, you know, Fitbit data, to helping people understand the problem, to helping people decide what to do via Google Maps, to then doing something about it. So Fitbit, I guess, providing feedback on their actions. They were talking about Android Health Kit, which would be a bit like Apple Health, allowing different devices and apps to share health data with an Android. And I think they think that's going to be really, really important. So that was really, really interesting for me, actually. And they obviously see that they can make a lot of progress supporting people. So that was good. Yeah. Yeah. Anything else that you were picking up from the YouTube staff there, Gandhi?
And very much they were keen to try and promote the concept of having validated content, weren't they, Andy? So, you know, they have already done some work around this. And one of their big things that's going to come through shortly and already starting to come through is something called the health shelf. And, you know, that I think is going to be really interesting. So, you know, if you were to search for a health term, you'll be allocated to, you'll be shown a couple of videos that YouTube think are the most valuable types of content to see around that health topic. And it will try and prioritize that view to those organizations where there is an element of authority or validity in terms of the information they're providing. So, for example, NHS organizations, that's an obvious one because we know about the branding and the content and the process of stuff that comes through from the NHS. So that's clearly understandable that that content would be there. There's also some other stuff from some of the Royal Colleges and, you know, official organizations and stuff that have got an added element of validity. But the challenge I think that YouTube has and also those organizations is that their concept of promoting that information is really difficult in terms of getting out quickly. And we saw that with Strep A, and Strep A was mentioned various times throughout this conference as well as an example. But also that content can speak to one particular type of audience. And actually, if you want to speak to a variety of audiences, you need to speak to the people that are talking to them and that those audiences will listen to. And that is often the independent creators. And then you've got that lovely paradox of how do you know which independent creators to trust and which ones to go with. So there's lots of discussions around that, but it seems like YouTube are looking at how they can be more responsible with that aspect of things and support independent, you know, creators. For example, us, I guess we fit that bill. Absolutely. And, you know, how can they make that information safe and sensible to use versus responsive and all the other kind of stuff? And it was really interesting to hear, you know, the challenges that they face with also trying to do that as an organization versus, you know, having that information available for what people want to hear and need to hear as well.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, something that came across to me from the YouTube organization was this, you know, feeling of responsibility that they have because so many people are turning to their platform and have turned to their platform for help with health information. And there are a number of features that you're alluding to. I've just got some pictures here, actually, just to show people what some of these look like, because some are available in the UK and some are sort of US only, and they're coming to the UK soon. So the approach they're adopting is sort of presenting information along additional sort of authority stamps, I guess, alongside information, so people know that they're watching something from a reputable health organization. And they're beginning in countries by having conversations with the governments, the health services, you know, representatives of professions about how to do this. So you know, it's not a US size fits all in the world. You know, in the UK, you know, NHS services are eligible for the health information panel, but they intend to expand that to other organizations as is appropriate, so you get a little stamp of approval there. This health shelf content is about presenting approved good quality videos together. When people search for a particular topic, you'll get a kind of selection of what they think are relevant videos, and it'll be labeled as being on the health shelf. So I think that's really good. And then another thing which I thought was quite helpful, and hopefully will be coming to the UK soon, is providing these like crisis resource panels when people search for certain things like suicide and eating disorders and certain topics like that. Then they get something that actually links them through to a charity or a government funded help service specifically for that issue, which I thought was good, because something that came up, and one of the creators, bless them, said it, because when we were talking about risk management and people were saying, how do you manage risk, you know, as a creator when you're creating content? And she said those words that just made the hairs go up on the back of my head. They said, oh, you know, and at the end I say, well, if you're concerned, talk to your GP. And I always worry about that, because sometimes you can get people to present legitimately and for the right reasons to their GP with something they've been sitting on for a long time, and that can create a really good health outcome for them in the health service. But sometimes you can, you know, you can create worried well, can't you, and send them in the direction of the GP who's already struggling to cope, or the A&E department. Yeah. So this, I think, is a really useful alternative for that, for managing risk within the platform. Yeah. So I was really pleased to see that. So that was good.
And it seems particularly that one core box, which is what they call it, is I think a really exceptional idea that they've integrated. So I think they've already got it for, like you say, for when people have mental health challenges or suicide risk, that it directs them to the Samaritans. They've just started the eating disorder one, which directs them to a charity called Beat, which is about tackling, you know, eating disorders and that kind of stuff. And there are hopefully going to be more of that kind of trend happening soon. It's just obviously trying to figure out what content needs to go where and that kind of stuff, which is often the challenge with all of this, isn't it, and stuff.
It is, yeah. And just generally, I think the YouTube team were really keen to help support content creators. So as you say, there was some sessions about, you know, analytics and what makes something, you know, popular and viral, getting your thumbnails right, you know, all this sort of content was really, really helpful. The other thing they were quite keen on was shorts. You probably picked up on this as well, Gandhi, because a lot of different people from YouTube were banging on about shorts, which is their phone format short video sort of service, which I think is set up really as a response to TikTok, although I think there is some excitement about the ability of those clips to spread virally, you know, just by virtue of that being quite a shareable format. And they were quite keen for health creators to start experimenting with that. Did that come through to you, Gandhi?
Definitely. I think, you know, we know that attention spans are changing in terms of the way people consume information, short, sharp information, to potentially lead on to other types of content. So, you know, using that as a method to direct to people to other types of longer form content can be really powerful. But absolutely, we know that you know, the short type content. So, you know, there's YouTube Shorts, there's TikToks, there's Instagram Reels, for example. All those kind of things are basically the type of content that is being consumed in the largest numbers currently, because it's short, it's sharp, and that kind of stuff. And people are looking at how that can function effectively. YouTube definitely keen to invest, you know, the way that people use that content for sharing information. And it's a challenge, you know, creating short, concise information that is sensible and, you know, useful to people, versus, you know, I mean, it very much sets itself for entertainment based content, but how can you do that from a health perspective is a bit more of an interesting challenge. And it's something we've been talking about, isn't it, in terms of, you know, what could we do from perspectives to help with that. It's stuff I've already done, so some of like my Strep A content was based around that in terms of a short format, but I think I've still got a lot to learn in terms of how to do that effectively and trying to as well. Do you want to know how to use System 1 more effectively as a clinician? There are various different things you can look at, but there is only one course that can help you understand this and have all my hints and tips on how to use System 1 so much more effectively, and that's the System 1 course for clinicians. If you want to have a look at it, have a look bit.ly/TPPS1course, TPP and S1 in capitals. But if you do have a look at it, what will you get? Well, you'll get content and information and guides on how to use System 1 more effectively, from getting started with System 1 to navigating the patient record, to understanding the key parts like doing a consultation, as well as prescribing, clinical admin, communication, and various other information. And this includes my hints and tips on how to use System 1 so much more effectively, so it saves you time and your patients stress in terms of their navigation with their patient journey. If you want to have a look at it, check out the link. As I said, it's bit.ly/TPPS1course, and the TPP and S1 are all in capitals, and you will get access to all this content perfectly. Even better yet, there's a money back guarantee. So if you don't actually find this course has helped save you some time, just let me know. I'll refund you the course once you've completed it and stuff. Catch you then.
Yeah, it strikes me it might be a way of making like short, quick points and then getting people engaged so that maybe they consume a more full form health message, as a regular YouTube video. I think people are going to be experimenting with how that lands in the health sector for a while. I had an interesting conversation with somebody who was a lay representative at the RCGP and also working with the Academy of Royal Modern Medical Colleges. So that's all the Royal College of Physicians, Surgeons, GPs, they get together in this Academy of Royal Medical Colleges. And they have a working group looking at, I think regulating is the wrong word, but looking at that issue of quality assurance of clinicians providing medical information on YouTube and other social media areas and kind of what that means. I thought that was really interesting that they were there, engaging with YouTube on this issue. And it was interesting to hear from YouTube the approach that they've adopted in America to this sort of issue. And actually, they're expanding these, the health information panels that say that it's from a health organization. They are expanding it in America for individual licensed doctors. So if you're a licensed doctor, you can that can be displayed on your or next to your content. And obviously, as a licensed doctor, you probably have a higher bar, to meet in terms of the quality of the information that you're producing, and you're accountable to your medical college, for that, or regulatory bodies. But I thought that was an interesting approach that they're rolling out in the US, and it may or may not come to the UK, I guess, depending on engagement with our local and national health regulatory bodies. But I thought that was interesting, and everybody's trying to answer these new problems that this new world of video healthcare is throwing up, essentially. Do you have any other interesting conversations when you were there, Gandhi? Bump into anyone?
I think you mentioned about this whole validity of clinicians and when they provide content and stuff. And I think it also provides a challenge, because there was also that concept of what do you do about those people who have different viewpoints on things? And there are, clinicians who have very focused or specific viewpoints on aspects of health that may not fit with mainstream perspectives. And, sometimes they can be so out of the box that it can actually potentially be harmful. And how do you balance that element of risk? We've seen some elements of, for example, of clinicians who are very anti-vax, and obviously that has an implication in terms of the message they push, other aspects in terms of expectations of healthcare and how that can be different, and signposting people to have something that may not be available, which can cause a lot of challenges. We've seen a significant increase in terms of patients wanting assessments for things like ADHD and autism following social media usage and things. And whilst that definitely has a place in terms of understanding the challenges patients face, the other reality is that the system just isn't designed to cope with that. And that leads, unfortunately, to conflict in consultations as a result of it, and challenges even more so for those individual patients. Another really big one that happened a few months back was the whole semaglutide use of patients, public, sorry, not patients, wanting to use it as a weight loss drug, because that's what some TikTokers have mentioned. And actually, in the UK, it's not licensed for that use, and it's not available on the NHS in that use. And therefore, that led to many consultations I had advising patients that we couldn't prescribe it for that reason. But that was the expectation they were having because of information they had from both influencers of medical and non-medical types, So that responsibility element is a challenge,
I mean, these are all new challenges and phenomenon that we all have to deal with now that video is here to stay. You alluded, I think, to the symptoms spread by TikTok, not YouTube. And the mental health discussion panel was interesting, and they talked about an article that was published in Brain, so a reputable medical journal, peer reviewed, that talked about how during the pandemic there was a rise in people with symptoms of Tourette's syndrome. So that's verbal and physical tics that manifest with people. And the doctors were trying to work out what was going on. And a common factor was actually watching TikTok videos from particular TikTokers, where they talk about Tourette's tics, and obviously these are visible online. And the link was made that. And actually, the conclusion of this peer-reviewed journal article was that actually those behaviors were spread through TikTok, and that's why there was an upsurge in these sorts of behaviors. And they talk about a new type of of illness, which is this social media spread mass sociological illness. I think actually the mass sociological illnesses are not something new. So, and people often think, when there was a spike in Salem of witch trials, for example, you know, there was potentially some mass sociogenic sort of spread of certain behaviours that led to that. And you often see it actually something in clusters of suicides that occur and so forth, that actually if one person does something, other people can be more likely to exhibit similar symptoms. So that concept isn't something new, but this was, the authors felt that they had demonstrated that this was spread by social media. So yeah, lots of new challenges. Solutions to that weren't really forthcoming, to be honest, within the conference, but it's just an interesting phenomenon. Very interesting. And then I suppose the final thing was, you know, there was an opportunity for creators to talk to each other and talk about some of the challenges that they're facing as creators, really. Some things I picked up on there as you were in some of the panels, Gandhi, so I was watching them, but I felt I saw creators talking about challenges between catering for their initial niche or niching down. These are things that lots of creators talk about, you know, not just medical creators. Yeah. But do I focus on a niche, or do I create more general content and maybe go for audience capture, you know? But what does that mean for the initial reason I created the channel, you know, in that initial very specific audience? So people were grappling with that and, you know, thinking about very practical things about getting their thumbnails right and outsourcing video editing and so forth. But what did you take away from that as a creator, or how did you feel about those creator conversations?
I think it was useful to hear from other people in a similar situation to ourselves. So, you know, I watch a lot of content about how to improve, you know, the way that you create content, and you know, there's loads of stuff out there, and there's definitely some voices I listen to, and there's probably other voices I don't listen to and stuff. And, you know, having the opportunity to talk through that with other content creators in the health sphere was really interesting, because obviously there are certain challenges that apply to us that do not apply to other types of content creators. You know, people like, you know, Mr. Beast is a well-recognized name who creates amazing content. You know, he's the fastest growing YouTube personality. He's likely to be the yardstick that everyone applies themselves to when it comes to, you know, YouTube creation and that kind of stuff. But actually Mr. Beast creates content that we can't create because of actually the type of voices we're trying to share and you know, stuff we're trying to look at and things. So then how can we do that differently and responsibly? Because actually obviously there's an element of responsibility in terms of the stuff we create and things. So being able to talk about that with other creators and understand some of the challenges and tips and journeys that they've had, I think was really, really nice. And being part of that community, which has actually come off from that. So, you know, we're now part of that growing community of health content creators. And, you know, I've always been very keen to support other people to create their own content and stuff, and even creative stuff to help people do that and stuff. And if you want to check that out, there'll be links down below and stuff to do so. But I think seeing how that journey is going to continue in the future is really interesting. And I'm definitely keen to know where that road is going to take us, but also other people, you know, who's the next Mr. Beast of the health content creation world and stuff, you know. That'd be awesome to find out.
Absolutely. Maybe it's you, Gandhi, who knows. An interesting thing, there was a point in the conference where I turned to you, Gandhi, and I said, because someone mentioned the word older creators. Yeah. Gandhi, we're over 40 now, shock horror. But I said, are we older creators? And Gandhi said, yeah, I think we are, actually. Yeah. So, that was interesting to be boxed like that.
You're not wrong there. I mean, we were probably some of the older you know, content creators in the room. Majority of people were sub 30, I would probably say, in terms of the, you know, so a good 10-year difference and stuff. And you know, you had some people in that room that had like millions of followers and you know, doing some really interesting content in their niche. I think that's the key thing, you know. Different niches have different impacts and stuff. So overall, it was just an absolutely amazing experience and opened my eyes to a completely different way of doing things and stuff. So definitely keen to see how that journey is going to help us in 2023. I know that led on to another meeting that I went to, because I know you weren't able to attend and stuff, which was just last Wednesday. And that was interesting, because that was a much more focused group about talking about content creation as clinicians and that kind of stuff, and really, you know, in-depth stuff. And actually I kind of twinned that with a trip to another organization that a lot of our EGP learners will know about, going to go see Accurix, and I live streamed for the first time from Accurix and got to see their premises and you know, had a really amazing chat with them about some of the stuff they're up to and stuff. And if people do want to check that out, have a look at the video coming up right here. Ultimately, my reflections are probably coming up a little bit later down the line once I've finished filming it and stuff and things. But definitely go check those content out, because I think that's going to be really interesting stuff for people to have a look at. Don't you, Andy?
Oh, absolutely. I'm really intrigued to know what happened at the follow-up meeting with YouTube. So I'll definitely be looking out for that video, Gandhi. But overall, I had a great day. It was really nice to experience the inside of a tech company and have those conversations inside. So great to be invited into their space. Loved the submarine style doors and the Dalek and the tech museum on the shelf. And it was all really, really great. So I had a great time. Maybe it'll happen again next year. Who knows?
Hopefully so. Well, it's the first of their events that they're doing, so there may be more to come for people to engage with and stuff, and we will more than likely, if we get the invite, be sharing our journey of that particular contact as well. So as I said, check out those other contents coming up here and here, and as always, we're here to help tech enhance your primary care and learning. We'll catch you next episode.
Oh, hello there, EGP learner. I'm Dr. Gandalf, and I often get asked, what kind of resources do you have to try and help those using EMIS? Because you tend to do a lot more stuff for System 1. And often I've really struggled to answer that question, because let's be honest, I don't use EMIS on a regular basis. So therefore, trying to help EMIS users is a little bit more difficult for myself. And that really made me feel, well, not great. So I kind of did something to try and help all those EMIS users out there. I went and had a chat with one of my colleagues, Dr. Mike from GP on the Move, and him and I have created a course that you can use to help you use EMIS so much better. That's right, if you use EMIS but you want to use it so much better, so much quicker, and in such a way that means you go home sooner, then check out our EMIS for Clinicians course. It's an online course that takes you through all the tips and tricks that Dr. Mike knows to try and basically mean you can go home quicker. That'd be a cool thing, wouldn't it? And guess what? It's currently on offer. So if you want to take advantage of this introductory offer and get access to it now, look at the links down below and check it out. Additionally, if you're a practice, network, or wide area that wants more opportunity to use it, send me an email, egplearning@gmail.com. Let's see if we can help you out. And as I like to say, tech enhance your primary care and learning. Shall we get back to it? Oh, and if you wanted one for System 1 users, well, you know I've got you covered, haven't I? Check out the Learn System 1 for Clinicians course, bit.ly/TPP S1 course.